Do you want to go into stasis for the rest of the trip and forfeit 18 months' wages? Do you want to listen to Dwarfcast by Ganymede and Titan? Choose.
Awoga, this is a Dwarfcast.
Hello and welcome to Dwarfcast, brought to you by Ganymede and Titan. Today we are gathered to discuss the brilliant Rob Grant, who died earlier this year at the age of 70, the co-creator of Red Dwarf, genius writer. So today we're just going to chat about our memories of Rob, some of his work, the way he's impacted our lives, and just generally reminisce and tell a few stories. And it's good to talk about these things. And so join us. My name is Ian Symes, and with me are Danny Stevenson.
Hello.
And Jonathan Capps.
Hello.
I suppose we should acknowledge straight at the bat that we've been prevaricating about this podcast for 3 months now. We obviously wanted to pay tribute to him, but we needed to kind of get our heads in the right place first. And make sure that we were ready to talk about it, because it did come as such an enormous shock.
I was...
Like, whether you knew Rob or not, it was completely out of the blue.
Yeah. Considering all the other stuff that had been going on, like the fact that he was about to release a book, and just like all these things, and like, you know, we'd been in contact with him. You know, it's not like as if we had, you know, it's no secret that we kind of have correspondence, or had correspondence with him. And we, you know, we did the interview with him and all that stuff. And Ian, you knew him on a much more personal level than either me and Caps. Mm. But yeah, so how did you end up getting with Rob? I assume it was through through Dimension Jump, or had you spoken to him well before that?
Joe had been courting him for a while to try and get him to Dimension Jump. She made it kind of a mission of hers. And we always had like the 30th anniversary one in mind, DJ 2018. And so, yeah, because Rob had really just not been present in Red Dwarf circles for a long, long time. He'd done Body Snatcher, which in itself came out of the blue because he hadn't been around for years prior to that.
Yeah.
Did Body Snatcher in 2007. And since then, he'd sort of, he was working with Andrew and he was doing his own non-Red Dwarfy projects, but he hadn't been involved in Red Dwarf fandom or anything, or being any sort of presence for ages. So Joe sort of sought him out and got in touch with him to sort of start the ball rolling. And I think she went to him initially to say that she was putting together the previous Dimension Jump to the one that he ended up going to. She was getting together stuff for the auction and the raffle, and did he have anything that he could contribute, and she used that as a kind of in with him. And Rob being Rob, he was just really friendly and really open, and then they got chatting, and then when it came to organising the next one, she sent the hard pitch to come to the 30th anniversary. It's going to be brilliant.
Bring your mates.
Yeah.
During the planning stage and stuff, it was like I think I was over at you and Jack. I think you might have been at work though, Ian. I don't know if you were. You may have been at work that day. But I mean, me and Joe were sat there, and Joe was like, right, so we need to chat with Rob, Ed and Paul now. We need to talk about what we're going to do for the thing. I'm like, sorry, what? Sorry, what? What are we doing? we need to, Rob and Ed and Paul are going to chat to us tonight. And I was like, oh, okay, fine. And it was just, it was weird because it, like, you kind of assume that they, not that they'd be intimidating, because they're not, they're human beings, they're normal people.
You assume Paul would be. Based on stories.
They'd be really serious, but no, they were really, you could tell they were just like friends having a chat, and we were just in on it, and it was really nice hearing them to just chat amongst themselves and like have joke about saying, you know, they were going to go to a hotel and just have a slumber party and go sit around in the dressing gowns all day. I was just like, it was nice to hear, and it was like, you know, this that was my first sort of, I don't think I'd spoken to Rob at all until then. That was the first time I'd actually spoken to him, like, so yeah, it was nice. And then we met up at DJ and stuff, and we did the live commentary, didn't we? That was the one and only time we've ever done that.
Yeah,
which
closed the event,
you know. Yeah, no, it was an excellent end, and you know, and I, more than ever now am I thankful we got to do that, especially with Rob. Because he had been invited, like, I think wasn't the thing was he was always invited to DJs, but he always declined, or he didn't go, or whatever. And there was one where he was supposed to come, and he got stuck in traffic, and he couldn't make it, and it was the same one that David Ross couldn't come to, so it was like a double blow, that specific DJ. I remember that being quite a downer.
I think that was the Nadir.
It really was.
Nadir J.
The third Peterborough one, I think.
Peterborough. Yeah,
2007.
Again, Rob hadn't even been, like, even done, like, Body Snatcher and stuff by that point, so it was, like, really, he wasn't part of the universe at all at that point. Like, he had literally distanced himself from it entirely. The only snippet we had of what Rob was doing or up to was on that Comedy Connections. It was that one little bit that we had. That's the only bit of information we'd seen, and the odd book that we'd saw, we'd like, oh, okay, Rob's he's still writing then.
I met Rob for the first time at a book signing for Incompetence, which was start of 2004, I think it was, because I remember travelling down to London for it, because it was before I moved to London, later in 2004, so it must have been early 2004. And I bought 3 copies of the book and got them signed because we were giving away competition prizes on G&T. And I remember going up to him and sort of nervously saying, is that okay to get 3? And he was like, of course it is, I get 3 times as much money. And yeah, it's very amiable, but I was shit scared. I was terrified. Not because of anything that he exhibited personally, but just because it was fucking Rob.
Yeah, that's the, you know, the demigod of Red Dwarf, basically. Yeah. You know, that's the, you know, it is quite a thing to go to the head of the head of the snake, so to speak.
I plucked up the courage to mention G&T, which was still in its sort of fledgling days back then, and said, I've got a whole website about Red Dwarf. And he sort of went, oh, was it just about Red Dwarf?
Yeah.
And that could have either have been, oh, you've got a whole website just for Red Dwarf, that's amazing. Or it could have been, oh, just Red Dwarf, that again.
Oh,
the Sheridan Smith
guy. Yeah, you know, about your books as well. And Filthy Richard Cup.
I said, we've got a section about Son of Cliché, and he's so eyes lit up at that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Son of Cliché, that was brilliant.
Ah, a man of culture, I see.
So that, like, so Red Dwarf was a bit, like, left a bad taste in his mouth at that point anyway.
I think so. I think you can probably track in interviews with him over the years how much, because he was really hurt when it ended. We don't know the circumstances, and we never will know the exact circumstances now, because Rob took them with him. But he was clearly very hurt when he left the show, and he said as much in interviews. And I think it's just a kind of healing process, where obviously if leaving Red Dwarf is the thing that caused you this pain, you probably don't want to think about Red Dwarf too often until, you know, years later you've come to terms with it and you can start to look at it a bit more objectively.
I'm not going to speculate, but, like, this has all of the signs of excessive burnout.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I know that. I've had exactly that with
massive burnout and all of the nasty reality complications that come with having to suddenly step away from work that you were supposed to be doing, right? And then the degradation of a relationship. And it I think I said this on a forum thread recently on the site, is that, God, it used to be a lot more fun to speculate about this. But now I guess, like, as we've got older and understood what life is like more, some of us have gone through the exact same things, it starts to become all too clear, really, what those the very human kind of things, the ups and downs and everything that have happened over the years. And it's just.
And I think we've got a greater appreciation now that these were real people that it was happening to.
Yeah.
Like, not just these mythical beings that we'd talked up in our heads, you know. Rob and Doug are actual people, and they have feelings.
Yeah, even though they're Man United fans, they are humans.
But yeah, over the course of the last decade or so, he seemed to want to really re-engage with Red Dwarf, which didn't necessarily go down well in all quarters, because it did lead to what we now refer to as the kerfuffle.
Yeah.
He was back involved with Grant and Early Productions. He was a presence for the AA adverts that happened in 2019, and then he wrote more Red Dwarf. He wrote Titan, which was announced as a novel in February, and then also in February, Rob died, which is really annoying. But we've still got this massive thing still to come.
Yeah.
I keep forgetting.
So do I,
weirdly.
Like this is taking every importance.
It's like it's been overshadowed.
Yeah, no, you're right. That's exactly what I was looking for. It's been overshadowed. Prior to that, though, you'd managed to interview him for your website before you merged to G&T, and you were the first person to get any information about anything to do with.
I was probably just the first person to think to email them at the time. Maybe I don't know what it because he was obviously very open with it. Those early interviews I did for the site, for my site, The White Hole, are an endless source of frustration for me because they just represent kind of quite big wasted opportunities, as far as I could tell. Like, I had Rob Gantier and I sent him a few questions. They were all right questions. They got some interesting answers, like the fairly infamous, what's it like watching Red Dwarf 7? He said it's like... like watching your ex-wife go out on a date or something along those lines.
They say it's like watching your ex-wife's honeymoon video.
Yeah, okay, that's it. Yeah, far better written than my memory. But yeah, and there was one thing that stood out for me from that interview, which took a couple of decades to come to fruition, but I asked him, would you ever think to join us at a DJ? And he says, yeah, why not? After all, we're all interested in the same thing, aren't we? And... that's essentially it. Like, he was just a big sci-fi nerd. And, of course, the show that he co-created, so much of his voice was in this thing that had just spoken to us as children, really, and continued to. Obviously would come from someone who would be very compatible with us, you know, just talking about just general things, you know. And that's something, especially you, Ian, found out, you know.
Yeah, accidentally became friends with him.
Yeah. He would have been delighted at Villa winning the Europa League.
Yeah.
He would have been showering you with texts.
I did think of him on Wednesday night because, like, after the game, I got a bunch of texts from people that I speak to rarely but always speak to about football. Living away from your home city, you become known as, like, I'm the Villa fan at work. Yeah. Everywhere I've worked, I've been the Villa fan. So loads of people just talk to me about the Villa. And, yeah, in all those texts that came through, I did think, Rob would definitely have texted me tonight. Because he texted me... I remember him texting me when we beat Bayern Munich in the Champions League last year. Just, up the Villa! From Rob Grant. It was delightful.
Mm-hmm.
So in between, before we became... close friends, but after DJ, there was another meeting where me and Danny went to his house.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
To interview Rob and Andrew about the Nether regions.
Oh, yes, it was. Yeah, it wasn't the Quantahorn at that point, was it? It was the Nether regions. I remember, because obviously Andrew Marshall, I didn't know who he was at the time, and then realised... like how influential, like as I was doing my research, going,
one
oh
my
of God.
My other favourite sitcoms as a kid, 2.4 children,
yeah, exactly, yeah. And it just like it's just mad when you realise kind of like, oh God, the early, and then like you see when you saw on like on Facebook and stuff where you see like other authors, just like it's like all authors just seem to know each other. I mean, clearly they do, they're all exist in the same universe, right? They all exist in, you know, well, it depends if they write that way,
they all live in the same house.
Yeah, but it's like they all kind of, you know, they all have like a, you know, they all go to the same events and talks you know, they'll have like networking and stuff. And yeah, like Robert Rankin was talking about like getting pissed with him on a fucking Saturday night, like just getting absolutely fucking shelled out on wine and just like, and waking up in someone else's house or something like that. I was like, it's like, yeah, Rob was just a student, wasn't he? Like he just did that shit as an adult, never mind as a kid.
Do you know what that reminds me of? Scarlet Pimpernel episode of Blackadder, where like Lord Byron and Shelley and everyone, they're all in Mrs. Miggins' pie shop. Or...
yeah, they all just hang out. They're just all poets. Yeah, yeah. So they all just hang out in Poets' Corner. So yeah, I remember going to his house and that was slightly intimidating. Because it was just like, you know, this is like ridiculous levels of access that we've been given, like such a privileged position we found ourselves in.
He's still a bit of a myth, like, well, not a myth, but like just still a bit unknowable at the time as well, wasn't he? Like having an interview with Rob Grant was like still a bit of a kind of a golden ticket sort of a thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Especially recorded one.
Yeah. And I remember when Ian asked the question about Grant Naylor, I looked distinctively uncomfortable. But only because, in my head, this is like dropping a bomb in the room, where actually it's a perfectly normal sensible question to ask, given the fact that like there had been like he had been slowly working his way back into it all, and we you know, it was like it was it was just a standard question. But I must have. I remember Andrew looked over at me, like, I was just sort of like, I'm not trying to hide myself, but just I felt really bad because I was just like, I'd be very, very, basically a big nerdy fan.
Well, I remember asking beforehand, would he be comfortable talking about leaving Red Dwarf? And he just shook his head and looked like droopy.
Yeah.
Shaking his head. Because I knew he was going to say no, but I felt like I had to just check.
Yeah, just in case he said, all right, you get one.
Yeah. And now you can ask no more questions, you've got to leave now.
Yeah.
No, but it was a lovely, that was a very, very interesting day.
Didn't we find out that day that he had the gold disc for the chicken song in his downstairs toilet?
It's on the back wall, it's behind the toilet. Yeah, it's on the it's like if you're standing to piss you can look at it.
what a perfect place for it.
I don't know whether that's an insult or an honour. To put it where we put it, it's what a comedy writer would do. That's the thing, that's the perfect placement.
But also, it means, you know, the majority of visitors to your house will see it.
Yeah, it's a place of pride.
It's the one place most people
know. Everyone's favourite books are on a shelf in the bathroom to read while you're having a shit.
I forgot about that was funny. I think Joe spotted it and asked him.
And I guess that interview then with him, it sounds to me like there was a professional, or like with that interview, you know, kind of respecting you as a professional as opposed to, you know, a fan site owner, someone who would respect him enough to say, do you mind if I ask about Red Dwarf? And then not to when he says no, you know, he showed a lot of trust in us as a fan site and you especially with certain things being embargoed, you know, certain, you know, conversation, things like that. There was a hell of a lot of trust there, which I thought was nice, and it was obvious that there was a big respect there between you two that, you know, just kind of built up over the years, I guess, just working with him.
Well, yeah, that leads on to the sort of next part of the timeline with me and Rob was lockdown theatre and the quarantine coming through.
Oh, yeah.
Which wasn't long. It was like October, November 2019 when we interviewed Rob and Andrew, and then obviously March 2020, as we all remember, was the event. And like, I want to say the day after lockdown was called, Rob phoned Joe and said, is he in there? Get him on speaker. And outlined his idea for how he was going to cheer up the nation.
God, he immediately thought of doing that. That just says a lot. Like, and it was like something safe, something that was not gonna ruffle any feathers. It wasn't gonna, like, anything that, like, it would be a way to just do something for. And he did, like, well, we did three series of it, right? Did all first three series that Paul Jackson was involved with, basically, which is what worked off almost like the Paul era. But the fact that, and then they got guests in and it got more popular. And it was a bit like, you know, because obviously the people who do like pub quizzes and stuff just got like really, really out of hand.
That one guy
who just ended up like creating an entire empire from this one idea that now sells books, and already thinking about just how to serve. That's such a nice thing to do. And it was really good. It was such a good idea and it was so helpful. Like, for, like, what, 18 weeks? Because was it one a week every Thursday? I can't remember.
There was, but then occasionally they'd have gaps where they'd do something different, like the lockdown theatre specials.
That's right. So
I think they paused after the end of series two because some restrictions had been lifted, and then they brought it back when the restrictions got unlifted again.
We can't be trusted.
Yeah. The idea was all his as well. I think having done the DJ one... because they started with Future Echoes because they'd already done the end at DJ.
That was interesting. That was nice. That felt like, oh, wow, they've actually sort of, like, ours is canon.
We were there for the pilot.
Is part of the oeuvre. That's like, oh. But they did go back and do the end again, didn't they?
They did,
They went to series one.
There was a complete set on YouTube at the end.
A bit like actually the end. There's about four different versions of it.
Well, that's it, yeah. There's now five. There's not five versions
with
of
commentaries.
The commentaries. God knows how many. It's like an Edgar Wright box set.
So yeah, I remember initially he phoned us up for like technical help, like what could I do for it? Will Zoom? Rob was quite techie himself. He was very tech savvy. He's not an old man when it came to technology. He was always kept on top of the curve.
Young boomer, isn't he? 55.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they're all tech.
Our parents' generation.
Exactly, precisely our parents' generation. My stepdad is exactly the same age, so almost.
We helped him sort of figure out the best way to do it through Zoom, and like helped him figure out which level of package subscription he needed to buy in order to be able to have however many guests he wanted. Joe helped him to set up the mailing list for people to sign up and get the link sent to them. And he wrote the initial sort of release to go out, and he asked me to cast an eye over it for him. And I was like, fucking hell, I'm script editing Rob Grant. How has this happened?
Is this what it felt like for Andrew Allard?
I suggested the byline of minimum leisure facilities. And also corrected where he'd said we're going to be commentating on season 1, episode 2, Future Echoes. I changed it to series. So yeah, I did my bit.
He did.
It should be series I anyway.
Well, depends.
I've lost track of the opinion I have on it, to be honest.
Yeah, it's like scone or scone. I don't know whether I say scone or scone.
Yeah, don't care. You say tomato, so do I. Fucking leave it.
No one says potato. What are you on about?
Ew, potato.
So yeah, lockdown theatre, and lockdown theatre turned into its whole thing as well. Like they had the whole thing with the, like it went from, you know, it went from three people talking at a convention, and then slowly that evolved into doing it online for 300 odd people, to getting everyone who'd had a knighthood in the same fucking room, and fuck. Wow, that's an insane thing to do, which I never got to see. Did you get to see that, Ian? I think you did, didn't you?
Were
we there
saw
for
the dress, didn't you?
I was there for the rehearsal.
Right, okay.
The most surreal Zoom call you'll ever be on, where you open up Zoom and there's Rob Grant and Paul Jackson and Ed Bye. By that point, I'm quite used to being on Zoom calls with them.
Standard fare.
But then there's Sir Derek Jacobi. And there's Ian McKellen, and there's fucking Brunar, Judy Dench, Maggie Smith, all just chatting amongst themselves. And Brunar took it upon himself to sort of direct the whole piece, as he would. And he was sort of saying, Sirian, if you could answer a question, and then we can sort of bring Dame Judy into it, and then maybe Sir Derek, you could jump in afterwards.
Oh man.
And then, yeah, I think this is all right to say. At one point when they were sort of practicing, like going through what they might say and topics that they could bring up and anecdotes that they could bring in, Sir Ian McKellen just went on one about how we should talk about vaccinations because there are some fucking idiots on the internet who don't want to get vaccinations. What fucking cunts. We should go and tell everyone to get vaccinations. What's wrong with people? Everyone should have a fucking vaccination. Oh, thank God.
Yeah, I was going to say, it could have gone either way, couldn't it?
Thank God it went that way.
Well,
if I couldn't have loved Ian McKellen more...
I was going to say, Ian McKellen, like, yeah, no, to be fair, it couldn't have gone either way, because it's Ian McKellen.
Ian McKellen, yeah.
Yeah.
And then the actual lockdown theatre ones, where they got... There's another fucking surreal Zoom call I was on with Robert Lindsay, Joanna Lumley, and Michael Palin.
God, yeah.
Just waiting for Godot.
Oh my God.
Just the pull that Rob, Paul, and Ed had was incredible. Because even like the regular lockdown theatre ones, where it was just them reading a new script and stuff, they had an incredible cast.
Yeah, they had like,
their mates.
They had Ewan Rian from Game of Thrones. There was Francis Barber. Yeah. There was
Martin Kemp.
Martin Kemp, yeah. Didn't, is, yeah. Is did Lily do some stuff as well? Didn't Rob's daughter get involved with some of them?
Yeah. Rob's daughter Lily played a couple of parts.
Yeah, mad.
Felicity Montague.
Oh, of course, Felicity. Yes, of course. Learn.
Robert Lindsay again. Yeah.
It's funny, isn't it? Because you talk about the 5 degrees of Kevin Bacon. Can you, like, and also a fact I heard there, like, there's something like 3 or 4 England players that separate the 66 squad to this World Cup squad. And, like, amongst as Paul, Ed,
players
and
that have played with each other.
Rob. You are. Yeah, they've played with each other.
As in,
yeah.
They've played with each other.
So that's sort of like, you wouldn't have to go far from, like, fucking a legendary producer, a legendary director and a legendary writer to find basically anyone. Like, they just must know the whole industry between them.
Well, look at some of the names that were in the tribute to Rob
this,
on top.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Lenny Henry, Ian Hislop. And, shout out to Curtis Threadgold for pulling that one
together. Oh, my God. I mean, I remember being quite frustrated with Toss having not done anything.
Well, we didn't even know Curtis was employed by Doug anymore on the site, you know. So, like, it wasn't anything to assume that, you know, there was something bubbling up, but really did do him justice. And, of course, Curtis and Rob were very good friends from many years before us, because they were... they did stand up together briefly, didn't they? And there was a course that Rob was doing that Curtis was on.
Yeah, and they continued writing together. And I think that has seen the light of day, but they did. They worked on things together throughout the years. It was Rob that suggested Curtis for the job when it came up after Seb died, of like, well, we need someone that can write about Red Dwarf. And Rob said, oh, you know Curtis, he'll do a great job, won't he? And we just said, yes, of course. Give it to Curtis immediately.
Incidentally, I couldn't think of like 2 people I'd want to have a pint with together more than Curtis and Rob, to be honest. Yeah. Curtis is one of the greatest human beings around.
Shall we talk about the moment that kind of cemented mine and Rob's friendship and sort of bound us together?
Yes.
It was because we were helping out like on an ongoing weekly basis with quarantine commentaries and lockdown theatre. And it was coming up to, I can't remember which, whether it was the first or second lockdown theatre.
No, it's coming.
But we were sort of, me and Joe had both been there for the rehearsals earlier in the week where they did like a full read through of the script and we made some notes and sent some feedback as to like which bits needed tweaking from an audience point of view and things. So then it got to the day of the recording, well, not the recording, the live broadcast, which was Sunday the 3rd of May, is lodged into my head.
When
Joe had to go into a hospital to have labour induced for the birth of our child. So we told a handful of people, like close friends, that this was happening. But I thought, I better tell the guys because, like, Joe definitely won't be there when the thing happens. Because it was fucking lockdown, I was at home. Joe had to go into hospital on her own, and I just got the call when things were close so that I could be there for the birth itself. So I thought, I'll just send a quick email. So I emailed the group, which is Rob, Paul, Ed, and said, unfortunately, a bit of a change of plan. We won't be there because Joe's gone into hospital. She's going to be induced. So good luck. I hope it all goes well. Obviously, don't say any of this on air or anything. That would be ridiculous. To which, everyone replied, oh, blimey, good luck, have a great time, let us know, keep us posted. So then, like I say, I was at home, so I thought I'd tune in for the start, where it came on, and Paul was the first person to speak, sort of welcomed everyone. Welcome to Lockdown Theatre, I'm glad you could all join us today, it's a brilliant event, we've got a marvellous cast. Then he handed over to Rob. And Rob said, hi everyone, Joe is in labour. But she wasn't even. She wasn't in labour yet.
Hilarious.
Just, I remember seeing Ed Bye's face. Just sheer panic. Like, wide eyed. Like, Rob, you weren't supposed to fucking say that.
That's amazing.
And then I started getting lots of messages and phone calls. Because, we told our closest friends, but, like, almost all of our friends are Red Dwarf fans.
Yeah.
So, everyone that we'd ever met at conventions over the years, like people that, yeah, people that are mates but not close friends. All of a sudden.
All of a sudden, everyone's in that room at the same time and gets that news at once. It's like...
Amazing.
Oh, God.
I got a phone call from Shelley, who did already know. Just say, are you watching?
Yes,
I've
seen it.
Yeah. I'm aware of the event.
It's nice to refer to give you the heads up, though. It's like, you didn't realise that Rob just broadcast
Yeah, embargo has lifted.
And yet, he expected us to stick to the cover embargo of all of the cheek.
Yeah, that we got sent a day before.
Rob has written a book.
I will read out the email that he sent day. Oh, no, a few days later, because, yeah, she was born the following day on the 4th. We shared the news with Rob, and so everything was fine. So he sent 2 days later, "Guys, I'm so sorry I blabbed on Sunday. I was dealing with a lot of last-minute emails, and I didn't read to the bottom of yours. In fact, I'm not sure anything sunk in after the first sentence. Even so, I shouldn't have said anything without your explicit permission, and this has now joined the carousel of hideous mistakes that slam into your brain unbidden and make you say fuck in the middle of a supermarket."
Wow.
And in that same email, he said that he undertakes to get our daughter whatever present she wants for her birthday up until the time she starts wanting a car. And, yeah, so he sent birthday presents every year without fail. Some really fucking good ones as well. a writing kit that taught her how to form letters and how to turn them into words. He sent a space themed nightlight, which is obviously on brand. And then obviously this year, instead of Rob sending a present, Kath, Rob's wife, decided to take up the mantle and has said that she's going to carry on this promise to buy presents every year until she wants a car.
That's really nice.
Which is the loveliest thing in the world.
And also about a week, maybe 2 weeks after Rob had died, Kath did this. It was
yeah.
Fresh.
Yeah.
It's incredible, really.
I finally got to meet Lily in real life off the back of all of this, having spoken to her online for years, and yeah, she's amazing. I didn't meet Joe, unfortunately, Rob's son, but his contribution to the tribute on Toss is just
legendary.
Oh my God! I mean, for him to have
his father's son.
Presence of mind, yeah, to come up with that,
yeah,
for that, that it is the most perfect tribute. It is the most perfect tribute, and it is just perfect. I mean, we'll go through the timeline. I suppose the last thing that sort of, other than the book and everything, the embargo, was the interview that we all did. And that was a really, really...
God, yeah.
That was a real... That was sort of like the...
This was the Butski.
It was to celebrate the fact, really, that the kerfuffle was over, and that there was a couple of joint statements from Rob and Doug co-signed together, which was a huge deal. Just to have both of their names on things. And so Rob sort of let me know that he would be open to an interview should we decide to. He basically wanted to talk about stuff and to get it out there. And we were happy to be used for this purpose. No problem whatsoever.
We did invite Doug for a chat as well. Not in the same interview, but in the...
At the same time. He said not now, because I don't have any news yet. Not that Rob had any news either, but he just wanted to... He was so excited about all the different forms that his Butskiverse could take.
Yeah.
And all the different ideas that were flowing out of him, and he just wanted to chinwag about it, really.
And I'm glad we're going to get at least one fruit of those ideas.
The forbidden Butski fruit.
I'm assuming it's only going to represent a fraction of what was cooked up in his head over the years, but...
Yeah.
Hey. We get something, and it's a legacy. Oh, well, an extra legacy.
Well, not that he needed
it. No, he didn't.
It hasn't sunk in, really, that, you know, at the time of recording, less than 2 months, there will be new Rob Grant Red Dwarf material.
Yeah.
Which there hasn't been for 30 years.
Yeah.
1996, Backwards came out. 2026, Titan.
And it will be the only new Red Dwarf we have, and possibly will have.
Possibly the last. Although we've thought that before, but...
I'm 100% certain there is no more TV Red Dwarf ever. Mm. But...
possibly book.
Yeah, I've got so many questions, which I guess a lot of them will be answered soon, about what it's like, what the tone is. Yeah. I really want to talk to Andrew Marshall and get some sort of behind the scenes on it. Yeah, where, how many of the ideas came from Rob, and like, what was the process of getting them all down, and how did he help to shape it? And the frustrating thing about it is that I doubt that Rob would have just got all his ideas out in this.
Yeah, yeah.
There must have been so many more Red Dwarfy things that he could have done.
Maybe there's a Salmon of Doubt, a Rob Grant Salmon of Doubt.
I have been pondering that, yeah. If I don't know if there is enough notes or material or drafts or whatever lurking to do a sort of posthumous compilation, but that would be lovely if there was.
I'm sure if there is, then, you know, it would be like his family seemed like, you know, that they would want, you know, if it was worth, you know, worth a publish, if you see what I mean, like it would be something that be nice to do, they'd want to do, because, but sometimes authors are funny about this, right?
So if some stuff's not released, it's not released for a reason, and therefore,
yeah, exactly, yeah.
It's like Stanley Kubrick burning all his props and stuff afterwards because he just didn't want anything kept, like
a mad cunt.
Yeah, that's the big mad bastard. I think what frustrates me, and I've said this a few times, like off mic in various conversations up leading up until now, is that he's not been able to ask him, just get his opinion on various things that we were working on. Because we were working on some stuff, like we were working on like a VR thing and some other little projects and stuff, and it would have been nice to just get.
Or just, hey, what do you think of this? This is cool, right? And just, you know, because we know now that he would have, you know, probably appreciated, see?
He was aware of the Smega Drive.
Yeah.
I made him aware of the Smega Drive by sending him reaction gifts from his own show.
Yeah.
It was just starting to open up into, like, you know, we were starting to think about, you know, the future and, like, a long future of seeing Rob do stuff and talking to him about stuff, and it just feels very cruel to... in so many ways, just for that just to be taken away, you know. And obviously, it's a more selfish way of looking at it because we're talking about it in the context of Red Dwarf, which is very inherently much. like self-interested. But that is, you know, that is the basis for, like, you know, how we know him, and that was his outlet and hit the, you know, the big part of the good that he brought to the world, and just coming to terms with the fact that, you know, that avenue's closed off now is one of those gut punches that keeps happening.
Yeah.
It keeps getting you.
Yeah, you talk about what he gave to the world as well as his work itself, which would be enough for anyone. The main thing after he died that people were talking about was how much he loved collaborating with other people and giving other people a leg up, giving people a boost. I got chatting to a guy that ran one of the comedy courses that Rob spoke at. Well, yeah, Rob was supposed to, you know, turn up and teach for a bit. Ended up staying for the entire weekend, giving everyone on that course one-on-one time to go over their scripts. He gave out his email address to all the people on the course afterwards and said, like, send me your draft, send me things through and I'll cast an eye over them for you. Basically ended up script editing things for people and giving people notes from fucking Rob Grant, the co-creator of Red Dwarf, the saviour of Spitting Image, and, you know. And, yeah, basically mentored all these writers, Curtis being one of them.
Yeah,
a lot of writers like, no, fuck you, these are my gigs. I don't want more writers. They're all competition.
Also, I think a lot, I mean, this is more for companies, but you hear about, like, they actually straight up saying, we will not read anything you send us because, you know, they're covering their asses about some imagined, you know, plagiarism suit or anything like that. But, like, when you approach it from there, there's no room for, like, human warmth and, you know, and just humanity, really. And it is incredible to think about, like who, honestly, who can be asked taking on all that responsibility but someone like Rob, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that is a hell of a lot.
Yeah. There's 6 or 8 people on that course. That's like the amount of time it spends reading the scripts, making notes, making you know, suggesting changes, replying. It's like a day's work for each of them.
It really is, yeah.
But I said this in my obituary for Rob. The measure of him was how he treated other people. Because with me, like, I had got no right to be friends with Rob Grant. Like, it would be perfectly reasonable for him to have just gone, oh, that's a fan. Like, I can chat to him. It's fine. Whatever. Mm-hmm. But to actually see past that and just see me as a person and decide, yeah, I'll be friends with them, is just mad. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't expect to have anyone even remember my name, let alone want to message me about Red Dwarf, message me about Aston Villa, message me, like, ask for pictures of my daughter.
Mm.
And ultimately, I wouldn't have been nearly as upset when he died if he hadn't been friends with me, so fuck you.
Yeah. But you can start to see that, right, like you said, the measure of a man. People like Rob who take on responsibility to help others and like and seem to have no limit to it. They're exactly the sort of people who, for example, you know, massively burn out and things like that. And so this isn't just, you know, goodness of his own heart stuff. This is like, you know, when people do this, when people put above and beyond the effort to help someone or to just make someone happy even, they're putting themselves on the line as well every single time they do it. And they might not even realise they're doing it, but that's what the, you know, we need these sorts of people in the world, but they do, we also need to look after them.
Yeah.
Because...
protect them.
Yeah. I know a few.
I mean, I don't know whether to mention this, but the fact that Kath trusted us enough to actually break the news.
Yeah.
So it's like the fact that your rapport with Robert got so strong that to even announce is a hell of a thing to ask someone to do for a start.
To treat a fan site like a proper journalism outlet is one of the nicest things you can do to a fan site, because that's all they want to be is legit.
You know,
I mean, yeah, he just, like, in the space of a month, him and Andrew had given us, like, the official synopsis for the book, because the blurb that had turned up on the retailers' websites wasn't up to spec. Then, off the back of that, he asked the publishers to give us the first look at the image, which we had as an exclusive in like an hour before it went on Amazon.
Yeah, fuck you, Jeff.
And then, yeah, a couple of days later, I was making a cup of tea and I got a text from Rob, except it wasn't from Rob. It was from Kath on Rob's phone, telling me that he died, and would we mind telling the world? Well, of course we will. But how awful.
I was sat in the queue. I was still sat in the queue. Standing in the queue at Costa, and you texted, you said to me, no, that's it, because you said, are you sitting, you know, make sure you sat down. Mm. And then immediately just went,
and you're not
Rob's
holding
died.
A hot drink.
I just felt really numb. Like, I just stared at my phone for about 20 minutes, just like, what the fuck has happened?
It made no sense.
No.
Because if he'd have remained distant from Red Dwarf and from public life, and, you know, he may have been doing Quanderhorn and Nether Regions and whatever, but just, you know, not doing accompanying interviews and stuff, he'd have just been there in the background, and he'd have died. It would have been really sad, and we'd have been gutted because he was our hero. But it wouldn't have come as such a bolt out of the blue.
Yeah.
It's a badly written plot twist.
Yeah, it's a terrible twist.
Yeah.
But you didn't have to have known him or have interacted with him to feel that shock, because if you were vaguely interested in Red Dwarf and vaguely aware of what had been going on, he was in the news that week.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. It was just, you know, there was active development of things going on. It's just cruel.
There's not really a conclusion. But just to say that anyone who does want to talk about this stuff, about loss and about how they're feeling, we have a very, very friendly, very welcoming community on G&T. We like to think that people are comfortable being open and talking on there, and we are here. Use the comments on this post to share your memories of Rob as well. Just add to all the amazing swell of good feeling around him that has been really evident from the last few months.
We'll put some links in the show notes to the things that we've talked about, various interviews we've done with Rob over the years, and some of the other things that he's done that are publicly available. We'll just stick a compendium of stuff in the show notes so that you can pig out on Rob content. I'm rambling. And so, yeah, thanks very much for listening. It's been really helpful for us to have this chat as three friends, and the fact that we were able to record it and put it out to hopefully be of use to other people as well is a very nice thing. So we hope you've enjoyed, we hope you found it useful, and we will be back with our more regular Dwarfcast soon, but until then, thank you for listening, and as always,
Rob Grant, everyone. Rob Grant.
Thank you for listening to GNT Dwarfcast, and we hope sometime in the future you'll decide to listen to our Dwarfcast again. Have a safe onward journey. Goodbye.